want, but that's irrelevant. Maybe the system is so entrenched that he couldn't personally do anything about it, that he's only one man, etc., etc. Well, of course, this was what a lot of people were saying before he even ran for office, that you aren't going to change the system. I don't care whether your intentions are wrong. I don't care if you're inefficient. I don't care if the system is too big. I don't care what the reason is. You're not going to change the system. And if the only way to prove it is by example after example after example, then someday we'll have a course full of nothing of examples. When I wrote my newspaper column last November for release a week after the elections, I gave my analysis of the election returns that I felt that the governor election in California indicated that the state budget would grow by 25% in the next 4 years, and if not within 2 years, which was more likely, and that no matter, that in the National Congress, the results indicated by looking at the records of the individuals who were the victors, that it was undoubtedly true that the federal budget was going to make a great leap forward this next year and in the immediate years to follow before the next congressional election and so forth. Well, I wrote the column 2 weeks before the election took place, and I have no doubt whatsoever that the column will prove to be very true. Already Lyndon Johnson has proposed a budget which will be kicked at and hollered over and screamed at and so on, but it'll still be so much larger than last year's budget, and the deficit will be so much greater than last year's deficit and so forth. It doesn't matter who gets elected. The thing will continue going on its inexorable way because of the nature of the system itself. And you can't expect a man who is elected to go there and suddenly now be able to change the system. And for one last example, when I was still in the heat and furor of all of this, I went once to give a speech on the Liberty Amendment in Orange County. And it was just shortly after the 1962 election, I believe, or just after the inauguration that followed it. And the fellow on the program with me was a man who had been elected to the state assembly. And I had heard him speak during the campaign. And at that time, he was talking about all the things these guys in Sacramento were doing to us and so forth. And we were going to get those guys in Sacramento and so forth and so on. Well, he introduced the Liberty Amendment into the legislature, and he was on this program with me as a speaker. And when he spoke, he started telling everybody about what it is we do in Sacramento. And it was no longer those guys, because now he was one of them. And I made the prediction right on the spot that this guy would never get reelected. And this just goes to show that I'm very fallible, because he was elected by a landslide, and regardless of the fact that he had joined the other crowd, whether it was because people didn't want to recognize that, people didn't care, it was irrelevant, whatever, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that everything had changed from them to we now, because he was a part of the system. Well, now, the only reason I'm dwelling on this, and I think I've dwelt on it long enough, is to indicate that your best course of action with regard to the status quo, the government that exists, is to attempt to become independent of it rather than to try to manipulate it to your own ends or to think that in some other kind of a state it would be a better government, so forth and so on. The idea that if we can just get back to the Constitution and everything will be all right is, of course, refuted by the prima facie evidence that the Constitution is what got us into this position in the first place. If we go back to the Constitution, it just means we're going to come back to where we are now. Well, if it was the men and not the Constitution that got us into this position, then what good was the Constitution? If the Constitution was not so strong and invulnerable that it could protect us from these evil men, supposedly, who got us into this spot, then what's the sense of having a Constitution in the first place? So it isn't getting back to the Constitution. It isn't changing the system. It isn't trying to control it. Now, there is one alternative left to you. You may choose that you want to be the one ruler, and that it would be worth it to you to try. After all, Napoleon did it, Hitler did it. I've heard people say, well, I heard a people say, that if I could do what Adolf Hitler did, I wouldn't mind dying at the end of it prematurely, because look at all the power he had for a certain length of time and so forth. Imagine how he must have lived in the meantime. Well, that's fine, but that doesn't tell you how to get there, and it doesn't tell you that of all the thousands or millions of individuals who may have had the same idea at the time Hitler started, that you could even identify which one of all of those was going to make it. Certainly Napoleon conquered a good part of the earth, and so did Genghis Khan and so forth. But in advance, you could no more tell which one of them had the right way to get there than you could tell that Wilshire Boulevard was a good investment in 1922. And if you want to run the risk, if you want to take a chance, that's fine. Make your own value judgment. I have come to the conclusion that it's kind of a futile, frustrating way to try to use my limited resources. So now let's turn to the second possibility, and that is what is commonly thought of as a free society, a society in which no government exists and in which coercion would be, in effect, outlawed, although that sounds like a contradiction in terms.